Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. We got a little bit of a late start. I'll talk with Alejandro about that, so I have someone to complain to. But anyway, we're here. That's the important thing. Our guest tonight is Paul Stark. We're going to be talking about the his movie. It was called The Vatican Deception. We're going to be talking about Fatima. I always like that subject. It's very interesting. It's very interesting because it's one of those unexplained things that people have tried to explain it in different ways. Well, a couple of quick announcements. I try to get Donnie here. The retired police officer has been here a number of times in studio. Why? Because it's my last show on Top of the Mountain. I am actually moving, and hence that's the reason the show started about 7 minutes late. But anyway, I don't like moving. So I want to thank everyone that supports the show very much. Couldn't do it without you. And we're getting ready to roll. All
right. So UFO news, SpaceX. So there's a lot of news about these extraordinary lights in the sky in L.A. Just a couple nights ago, Sunday night, actually. And that was SpaceX. Everybody probably knows that by now. However, SpaceX tried to let people know before it happened, you know, to keep an eye out that this spectacular light show would be happening near LA and people would be able to see it. But it still sparked a lot of people going, what the heck? You know, they just didn't know what was going on, including some of our friends. I got a call from Lee Spiegel, who's in San Francisco, working with our friend James Fox, a documentary maker. And someone had their neighbor came over and said, hey, UFO guys, there's a UFO in the sky. So they all ran out and they're amazed by what they saw. And Lee gives me a call. Oh, my gosh, we just saw a UFO. And he sent me pictures and they were amazing. But the first thing I said was, I know what that is. That's SpaceX. And which is equally as exciting. I mean, he seemed kind of bummed, but I think it's very exciting because essentially what happened, and I have my little rocket pen here to demonstrate. This is actually the Saturn V, but the rocket took off and leaves behind this gas trail, and you see these plumes of the gas. And what's exciting, and this is why Lee should be excited about having the pictures and this whole thing being historic, because it also looked cool coming down because it came back. Rockets usually don't come back. This is the first time this rocket landed on the ground. Now, SpaceX has had Falcon 9 rockets launch and come land black on the planet again to be reusable. But in the past, they've used these remote drone boats that they land on because, like the first couple times it happened, the rockets fall over and explode, and people would have died if they would have been on board. They were damaged. So this was the first time on land. So that's, I think, so extremely exciting.
Amazing. And do you know, is this remotely operated, or is it all, do you know, happen to know if it's computer operated?
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is all computer operated. And then it's complicated, but a lot of even aerospace is like this, where, you know, it's the fly by wire. The whole computer's in control because it makes these minute adjustments, just tons and tons. And essentially, just the bigger computer you have, the better you can do this sort of thing. And the computers also learn over time. So they learn how to make the right adjustments to make sure that the rocket is staying upright, and then also the right pressure for the jets to push to be able to land on the ground like Buck Rogers or something. In fact, the Dragon spacecraft is going to be the first, likely to be the first, to take human space for the U.S. again. Our contract is out with the Russians. And what they wanted to do, SpaceX, they were going to actually land that rocket that way. But they're not going to now. They're just going to use parachutes. Boeing, who is the competition, who right now is behind, but they may catch up with SpaceX, and they may be the first to put space people in space next year sometime. But their rocket is going to land on land, but not like this Falcon did the other night. What they're going to do is they have essentially balloons. They have that blow up, and then this thing lands on the ground kind of on these balloons. So that's how they're going to do it.
Balloons on the underside of it, are you talking about?
Yeah. On the underside of the carriage. Yeah, so you have, you know, a capsule. I'm looking for something that looks like a capsule. Right. Oh, here's a UFO.
Well,
look at that. Mark D'Antonio made this.
Wow. Not everybody
but essentially,
say
it comes down like You know, it's got the parachutes, and then it comes down through the atmosphere, and then below here, these like crash bags, you know, like we have in our car, kind of inflate, and then it just goes bonk, and it lands on the ground. So just tons of exciting stuff going on in space. And with the privatization of space that we've got going on right now, all of these companies are building essentially craft that are not like what we've had in the past. So that's why we see all these lights the other night with SpaceX, and we'll continue to see new innovative spacecraft, especially throughout the next couple of years, being launched and then coming back through the atmosphere to the planet. So it's going to be an exciting time from here on out. Really, it's the space age again. We're going to be seeing an abundance of different craft and things coming in and out of our atmosphere, and that will only continue as humanity before we kind of blow ourselves up again or something. But yeah, so it's just an exciting time. So again, you know, drones were something that really changed what people see in the sky, and especially for those of us who follow UFOs, because a lot of stuff can be drones. We're going through kind of a similar thing where more and more, you know, like private space projects will be misidentified for UFOs and stuff. So I think it's really exciting right now, what we have going on. Otherwise, let's see, some of the other UFO news that we had talked about the other day. I think this is cool, the casino.org. I don't think we had talked about that before on your show. So there's a story, there's a few stories out there. I know this Australian paper had written about it. An interactive Mac tracks every U.S. alien sighting since 1940. Well, they're not alien sightings, but they are UFO sightings. But essentially, casino.org put up this UFO site where they're giving us the odds. What are the odds that you would see a UFO? Because you can bet on stuff like that, you know? And they have these drop downs where you can see how many sightings have been reported in different states and different countries. There's also an interactive map where you can click on it. So it's really cool. And then it tells you the odds, depending on the state you live in, the odds that you may see a UFO. It's also got a timeline for different UFO sightings throughout the years and some more statistics on UFO sightings. So it is a really interesting site, really cool stuff there. I had linked to it, and actually casino.org sent me a thank you on Twitter, which is kind of cool. So it seems like, and they interacted a bunch or a little bit with people, seems like they're really, whoever put together that site's really into the topic. But they did a really good job with that. So that's something that people should check out. And I think they did that in celebration of NASA's 60th anniversary. And you had pointed out on my podcast this other article regarding NASA's 60th anniversary, which is why haven't we found aliens yet? And then there was another one in PC Magazine is here's why aliens will probably come in peace. So these are all kind of the scientific community's efforts and ideas behind UFOs and, well, aliens especially, not so much UFOs. But still, they're really interesting topics and ideas that people should check out.
Excellent. Okay, Alejandro, thanks so much.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Okay, everyone, and I'll talk to you next week. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay, everyone, we have to go into a break here in just 1 minute, but first, before we do, I would like to introduce our guest and hang on just one moment. So Paul Stark, he is a producer, and he's also a director. And the film we're going to be talking about is The Vatican Deception. And it should be a great one. And we're going to go right into break right after I introduce him. Okay, Paul, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Hi, Martin, and thank you for having me on your show.
Sure, and thanks for your patience when I was running behind today. I appreciate that.
Well, it sounds like you're in the middle of a big move there. So that's not easy. Well,
could have planned a little better, I suppose. Anyway, we have to go into the break. So hang in there, everyone. This is Martin with Podcast UFO and KGRA Radio. And I'm with my guest, Paul Stark. And we'll be right back right after this break. All right. So, Paul, As I mentioned when we were, I called you through my phone and Skype and told you during these breaks we're actually live. So I guess we could talk about where do you live? Are you in Canada, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm located in Toronto, Canada.
Ah, Toronto. Uh-huh. And how did you get into filmmaking?
Well, it was an interest of mine for quite a number of years. And I got into it first by studying filmmaking at a local university here. From there, I started to build my own studio and I started producing some of my own films. Back in 2003, when I started my production company, I produced a short film which went on to win awards in Hollywood and New York and Houston. Wow. And Toronto. So, yeah, it was a good start. But, it's always you're always having to work to, to do more and to prove yourself. You can never just rest on your laurels. You're always having to prove yourself. And so, that was the beginning. And since then, I've produced other award-winning films. And I have to say, this is my first documentary that I've ever produced.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, people will forget you fast. Especially, you think of a lot of the actors, like, where are they now? Oh, I haven't seen this, this person or that person for forever. And they, once they're, like, out of the light, a lot of times it's hard for them to get back.
That's it. And these are people who were hugely successful, people who were known, nationally.
Right.
I'm just an independent guy. I'm not well known yet. And it's got to be a little more difficult even for me.
And this this topic, we will talk about that. We still have a couple minutes left here. So this topic, is this something that you've wanted to explore? I mean, it's, pretty interesting. And I did, watch the trailer. I didn't see the movie itself. Is that movie actually out where someone can actually watch it? Or is that, I know it was in limited theaters at one time, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we did release it to a limited number of theaters back earlier this year in January. And it's been screened in theaters across Canada and also in the UK. And there was also a recent screening in Cincinnati, Ohio. We're actually about to release the film online now so that the entire world can get to see this film. And the date for that release is coming up this Saturday, October 13.
And how's that? And we'll talk a little bit when we're back on KGRA Radio. How is that, you said online, so how are people going to watch that? It's not like Netflix or anything like that? It's something you'd have to order?
Yeah, that's right. It's you're probably familiar with Vimeo.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So Vimeo has a platform, a video on demand platform that allows people to show their films and to to allow people to either rent it or buy it.
Yep.
And so it'll be on the Vimeo's video on demand platform that we'll be releasing it.
I see. All right. Welcome back. My guest is Paul Stark. He has a movie out called The Vatican Deception. We're on KGRA Radio, and the show is Podcast UFO, and we're on every Tuesday on KGRA Radio, and we're also, you can watch us on live on YouTube streaming at the same time, and that's 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Tuesday. All right, so again, we were, before the break, I only had a couple of minutes, so if you can kind of tell the listening audience basically your background, and then we'll talk about your movie and a certain part of it. I want to talk about Fatima. I'm very interested in that. So so if you would give your background, if you would, to the you went to film school, we talked about on the break, and just kind of fill in the listener over at KGRA Radio.
Yeah, sure. So I actually started by studying business. And the reason I got that business background was because in the film business, you have to run a business. So I have a degree from Sir Wilfrid Laurier University. After I graduated there, I started studying filmmaking at Ryerson University in Toronto, Canada. And from there, I decided to open up or start my own film production company. So when I did that, one of the first projects that I produced was a short film, which I submitted to a number of festivals in North America. And the film ended up winning a number of awards in Hollywood and New York and in Houston and Toronto. And so that was my start to filmmaking. I thought, if I'm able to do this on the first film, hopefully I can reproduce the success and start producing bigger films.
I had a gentleman named Bryce Zabel on and on the show a while ago. He's a brilliant guy. And his wife said to him one day, you know, you should write like a movie. You could do that. And like the very first one, he ended up doing, I forget what, in Dark Skies or something like that, ended up doing all these series. One right after the other was a hit. You know, I mean, not a big hit, but I mean enough to sustain. Some people do get lucky, and some people really have the mind for that. For the YouTube listener, it looks like, do you have like an antique computer behind you? Is that what I'm looking at? Is that an old computer? What, are you in a computer store or something?
That's, yeah, you're looking at an old CRT television, which I've been meaning to replace. But, yeah, that is an antique, I guess, by today's standards. It still works, and I haven't used it for probably over a year now. But, yeah, I think that it's time for an upgrade.
Well, hey, you know, it might be worth something someday. I know the Apple One, the first Apple computer, just looks like a keyboard with a bunch of wires. It sold for over $2 million at auction a few years ago. You know, their experimental model. So there is going to be a market. I'm in kind of like in the market for antiques and all that stuff. And there is going to be a market someday for computers. But I know I'll be long gone by then anyway.
The key is that the rest of the equipment is up to date, so that's the most important.
That's right. So I'd like to jump in and talk about Fatima, because I mentioned kind of in the intro that there are different people have different takes on what took place. It's really fascinating. I know it began October 13th, I think it was, 1917. Which is May. Did I get that sort of right?
Sort of. October 13 was actually the last date that the apparitions took place, and they started 6 months earlier on May 13, 1917.
Now, and some people want to take it the complete, alien way, and say that the being was an alien actually, and then there's the religious side, where I think your film gets into, and they want to say it was a prophecy and all that. So have you looked at both sides? Or because the one thing, also called the miracle of the sun, the one thing sounds an awful lot like a UFO, and a number of people had mentioned that. A good friend of the show, Sam Maranto, has been on the show. He was following that. Could be possibly a UFO, and it's certainly unidentified, that's for sure. But can you, for the first time listener that's never heard about the Fatima incident, can you kind of in a nutshell tell the story, if you would?
Yeah, sure. I'll try to keep it as concise as I can, because there's just so much there's so much history there, there's so much detail.
Well, we have plenty of time.
I'll fill in all of that detail for you as much as I can, as concisely as I can. First of all, just to clarify, you mentioned that this is sort of looking at the religious side of it. To some extent, yes, because we're showing what the children reported, and obviously their experience was a religious experience, and so we had to look at it from that standpoint. But for your listeners who are wondering, this is actually an investigative documentary. And what it does is it investigates. Sure, we have to give some detail about what happened in 1917. But then what we're interested in is what the Vatican did with that information afterwards. And that's what the investigation is about. What's being concealed and what isn't, and what's going on there. So, you know, with that overview, I'll give you a little bit of the history of what happened in 1917 and what these children reported. So it began on May, well, it began before May 13, but for, you know, for simplicity, let's just say on May 13, this is when the children started reporting that the Blessed Virgin was appearing to them. And at the beginning, they seemed to know that it was the Blessed Virgin. That was their sense of it. But she never really identified herself to them. So the children were also referring to her as the Lady of Light. And she would appear to them every single month on the same day at the same time. Usually it was around noon hour on the 13th day of every month. And on the July 13 apparition, this Lady of Light, the children reported that she revealed a set of prophecies to the children. And these prophecies were referred to as the Three Secrets of Fatima. And you can imagine, you know, with every passing month, people were learning about what these children were reporting, and they were becoming curious. They were wondering what's going on. And so crowds were growing every month. There were bigger crowds coming out to see what was going on. And only the children could see the Blessed Virgin. Anybody who came out there didn't see what the children saw. What they were seeing, though, was what the people would see was something a little bit more like they would notice, for example, that the sun, the hot sun, would be a little bit dimmed. They were able to look at the sun without it hurting their eyes. They would see other signs, like sometimes they would see like what seemed like a cloud over the tree where the children were reporting that they were seeing the Blessed Virgin. There were other types of signs that they saw, like petals falling from the sky. So these are the sort of things that the people saw. But the children, they saw this Lady of Light. And so what was happening over time, the news, the secular media was catching wind about these apparitions, and they started reporting about it in the news. And a lot of people believed that the children were making up the stories. Some people didn't buy it at all. And so these children were being persecuted. And even Lucia, I'll give you the names of the three children. So Lucia was the oldest one, Lucia dos Santos. And she was there with her two younger cousins, Jacinta and Francisco Marto. And Lucia was 10 years old. Her cousins, Jacinta, was 7, and Francisco was 8. And so Lucia's mother, her own mother, thought that she was lying, that she was making these stories up. And she persecuted her own daughter. And the people from the neighborhood were also persecuting these kids, and the media was mocking them. And the persecutions became so bad that Lucia finally decided to ask this lady, can you perform a miracle so people will believe that you're really appearing to us? And so she said, yeah, keep coming every month at the same time on the same day. And on the final apparition, I'll perform a miracle for everybody to see. And so on October 13, the final apparition, there was a crowd of 70,000 people that came out in the fields in the middle of nowhere to see what was going to happen. The secular media came out. There were photographers. Everybody came out in this field to see what was going to happen. And it's worth noting that during that night before, there were torrential rains that were falling, and the rain was so heavy that it flooded the fields. There was water everywhere. There was mud. People were soaked coming out in the field, but it didn't deter them. They still came out, and at exactly the time predicted, they looked up in the sky and they could see the clouds parting. And they said that what they witnessed was what they called the miracle of the sun. And what they saw was at the beginning, they said that the sun looked like a disc that was spinning. And it was possible for them to look at it with their eyes without it hurting their eyes. And it began to move in a zigzag pattern. And it began throwing off colors. And they said that they noticed all around them the colors of, you know, everything looked multicolored. Their clothes looked colored, the trees, the grass, everything looked colored. And so this continued for a while with the sun moving around in a zigzag pattern. And at one point they said it looked like it had detached itself from the sky. And it looked like it was plummeting toward the earth. And everybody who was there started to panic. People started to, you know, feel like they were going to die. People fell to their knees. They began to pray. They were praying for forgiveness. And then the sun returned to its natural orbit in the sky. So that was the end of it. The whole thing lasted for about 10 minutes. And everybody said that when this whole thing was over, they noticed that everything was suddenly dry. All of that water that had fallen overnight, it was gone. And I remembered scientists reading a report about how some scientists said that the amount of energy that would have been required to evaporate that much water in that short amount of time would have incinerated the people. So it was a very interesting phenomenon. Everybody who was there reported the same thing. And that was essentially what they called the miracle of the sun.
Now, there were about 70,000 people in the middle of nowhere. And it's just really, really, really something else. And there's a lot of images anyone can find of these images on Google or anywhere else online. And people with their umbrellas and all that. So here's the thing about everything drying is really bizarre. And I know mud was dried up into regular dried like soil or whatever, but we know that the sun didn't actually do that. You know, the sun, of course, all the scientists in the world would say, hey, the sun did something really weird one day. We also know that the sun's not really connected to us like it could fall down into the, you know, from the sky and all that. So the only part that doesn't sound like it's just a plain, you know, UFO of some kind is when it seems to go back to its normal state. You know, that doesn't fit the rest of what you'd consider like a UFO. So
yeah, there is that, but there's another thing that I find very interesting with all of this, and because I have heard how some people suggested that maybe it was a UFO sighting. There's other people who also suggested that it might have been a mass hallucination.
Yeah.
But getting back to the UFO theory, one thing that I found very interesting about this entire event is the religious aspect of it. And, you know, it's difficult to ignore that part of it. When you look back, actually before May 13, before these apparitions started, Lucia reported that something else had happened before that, the year before. And what it was she said that there was an angel that appeared to her. She called it an angel. And this angel, when it appeared to her, it, I don't know how familiar you are with the Catholic Mass. You might know about, you know, how they receive the Eucharist and the body and blood of Christ, they call it. But these children, they received the body and blood of Christ in a sort of a divine form. It appeared to them, and they saw this Eucharist and a chalice floating before them, and they received this communion from an angel, or with the presence of this angel. So the thing that I find doesn't make sense with the UFO story is that why would you have this religious thing like UFOs normally don't function that way. You know, you don't usually associate UFOs with the Eucharist and with the receiving of the communion. So that's kind of that's the thing that really comes to mind for me. And also the messages. When you look at the messages that these children received, they were all messages. They were warnings about what was coming. They were warnings. I don't remember ever hearing about a UFO that predicted something that was coming. So these predictions also make it very interesting.
You know, what you do hear is you do hear a lot of people or that have had encounters say that they have like a warning, or they can see the earth in turmoil, you know, whether it's climate change or whatever it is. We have to take care of the planet. That's a message that a lot of people do discuss. And then, you know, playing devil's advocate a little bit, perhaps if it going back the other way, if it was some type of, and I don't have to say aliens, if it was some type of being or whatever, perhaps they were communicating in a way that they thought would be understood, you know. But the secrets of Fatima, now there's the two that were released, and then there's the third one that was supposed to be read actually by the Vatican, right, by the Pope or whatever, released basically in 1960. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right.
So whatever happened to the and do you know why they never talked about the third secret?
Yeah, we do have quite a bit of information about it. To begin with, the first two secrets, they were revealed in the 1940s, early 1940s. And the third secret was, as you say, was supposed to be released in 1960. And we know this because the world was anticipating the release. Back in the 1950s, there was a film made about the whole story of Fatima and what happened in 1917. Warner Brothers released a film about it, and it was actually nominated for an Academy Award in 1953. So, you know, so everybody knew that this third secret was supposed to be released, and they knew that it was supposed to be 1960, the release year. So when 1960 came, the Vatican decided not to release it. And there was a lot of speculation around what was going on, why they weren't releasing it. And so that became the mystery over the last 50 years now. Now, if you want to find out what that secret's about, you know, anybody who claims that they know the exact details of it, you know, I'd be skeptical about whether they do or not. But we do have enough information out there to have a pretty good understanding of its essence.
And just before you move on, I just wanted you to clarify, how do you have that information?
So this is from testimonies of people who have actually handled the secret or read the third secret. So these are like first, okay. What they call it, it's like a primary source information. And one of the key testimonies comes from, well, there's a number of them. One of the people who spoke about it is a man by the name of Father Malachi Martin.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He was in the Vatican during this time in the 1960s when it was supposed to be released. And his cardinal, Cardinal Bea, was close to the Pope, and he had a chance to read the Third Secret of Fatima through Cardinal Bea. And Father Malachi had a chance to read it through Cardinal Bea. And so he knew the details of it. And he had done a number of interviews on the Art Bell Show during the 1990s. And he was interviewed at length about a number of things, including the prophecy of Fatima. And Father Malachi had talked about it. Some of the things that he said was that the secret of Fatima, it involved two key things. Number one, he said that it would have something to do with the great apostasy, like a wholesale, he called it a wholesale apostasy throughout the church among laity and among the Catholic clergy. And he said the other salient characteristic about it is that it means intense suffering globally for the entire world. So that's that's one thing that we know about the third secret. And, you know, when you analyze and you dig into this, you start to realize, especially for anybody who belongs to the Catholic faith, if you start to hear about this this wholesale apostasy, it's basically it's an attack on your own faith. It's an abandonment of faith. That could have a devastating impact on the entire church of 1.2 billion people. So that would pretty much fit the bill of something that would, you know, that would give motivation to the top people in the church to conceal.
Interesting. And I know, you know, right now the Catholic, you know, religion is under fire, basically, with a lot of scandals going on. So they're probably, this is something they wouldn't, you know, feel like they had to release. I mean, they have their hands full right now.
That's right. There's enough controversy now that it's not something they would want to bring up. And yet, it's interesting because, you know, if you went back to the 1960s when this was actually supposed to be released, and if you had told a Catholic back then that such a time would come in our lifetime when the church would unravel and it would appear to be collapsing, back then, they would never have believed it. They would have said, you're crazy. This right. institution is 2,000 years old and it survived. And for you to say something like that just doesn't make any sense. And yet, here we are now. The prediction is actually fulfilling itself. We are seeing scandals beyond our imagination. And even Pope Benedict XVI, last year, he himself said the church is on the verge of capsizing. So what seemed to be like an impossible prediction is actually fulfilling itself. So this is what, you know, I find very interesting with the Fatima prophecies is this was predicted and it could never have been imagined.
So this was that was one of the things that were predicted in one of the so-called secrets.
That's right. So what we're referring to here is where Malachi Martin talked about the great apostasy or the wholesale apostasy in the church. And there was another cardinal, actually, a cardinal Chiappi, who also read the Third Secret. And he also said that in the Third Secret, it is foretold, among other things, that the great apostasy in the church would begin at the top. So he's referring to something, you know, obviously at the very highest levels of the hierarchy. Something like that, again, like, you know, it would have been hard to imagine something like that even 15 or 20 years ago. And yet here we are now living and seeing for ourselves. We have a lot of stuff going on, as you've been hearing in the media, that is making you wonder what's going on at the top, and do they even still believe in their own values, in their own faith, their own dogma? And you know, I'll let people answer that question for themselves. But you know, you have brought attention to it. Obviously, something's going on, but it was predicted, and we're seeing it fulfilled. Yeah.
All right, so we're ready to go to break. So hang in there. We'll be back for KGRA Radio. This is Martin Willis with my guest Paul Stark, The Vatican Deception. Thanks. All right, so in this break, we'll actually be taking calls, you know, in a little bit. So Evan, if you wouldn't mind putting up the call number up there. So we'll be taking calls in this second hour. It's not going to be quite an hour because we're on the radio station and it's cutting into their time a little bit, so it's going to be short of that. So for something for us to talk about for about 3.5 minutes here, how about how your film has been received so far? It's actually got some momentum. What are some other parts in the film besides, you know, Fatima? Can you just touch on some of those?
So let me think, because I mean, the focus obviously is on the prophecies, the predictions, and how we're actually seeing the fulfillment of them. One of the predictions was about the start of World War II. That was very interesting, and your listeners might want to have a look at this. I don't know if I should wait until we get back on, but your listeners can have a look at this. If you Google Aurora Borealis, which means Northern Lights, and you look for the date January 25th, 1938, you'll find that something happened on that date, and it was predicted by the prophecies of Fatima. The way the second secret was written, it said, when you see a strange light, when you see a night illuminated by a strange light, this would be a sign during the reign of Pope Pius XI that a worse war is about to break out. And when you look at that date, January 25th, 1938, Aurora Borealis, you'll find that there was a very strange light that appeared in the sky, and it was seen on five different continents. In England, the light was so bright that they thought Windsor Castle was burning down, and they actually dispatched the fire department. This is written up in the New York Times, because that's how bright the light was. They thought that there was a fire at Windsor Castle. Wow. So now, what happened 8 days after this? Hitler promoted himself to the general of the German army, and about 34 days after that, they marched into Austria and they annexed it to Germany. And sure enough, the Second World War, it escalated from there. And what's interesting is that that light that seemed to have come right before the beginning of World War II, it actually appeared exactly during the reign of Pope Pius XI. Now, what's interesting with that is that when the prediction was made, that pope wasn't elected yet. And as you may know, you don't normally know what name a pope will take on until they're elected, and they choose their own name. So for them to know the name of the pope and to know that this light would happen during his reign and that that would predicate the start of World War II, it's all very impressive. So I find that's a very interesting thing with the Fatima prophecies. And maybe one other thing I can throw in there quickly if we have time.
Just 20 seconds, yep.
We got 20, yep.
So I could probably squeeze it in there. Is that we also discuss a council that took place during 1960. It was called the Second Vatican Council, and it revolutionized the church. It abandoned traditional dogma, and it was the beginning of the end, if you can put it that way, of the church and its collapse. So
Here we go. Sorry. All right, welcome back. This is Martin Willis. My guest is Paul Stark. We're on KGRA Radio, and we are talking about the Vatican and so much more. I can't remember exactly where we left off before the last break, but we were, I believe, talking about the Catholic Church kind of crumbling, possibly. And the current pope is, I don't want to say controversial, but a little bit different than the norm, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, he's actually very different from the norm. I mean, I just read in the news recently, there were photos of him carrying what's called a stang. I don't know if your viewers or listeners are familiar with that term. It's apparently, it's like a staff that is used by witches or for witchcraft. Hmm. To see a pope carrying this kind of thing instead of a crucifix it's extremely unusual. You would never see anything like that in the past. He also, there was a time a couple of years back where he was, he met with the president of Bolivia, and the president of Bolivia handed him what was like a crucifix, but it was like the Christ crucified on the communist symbol of the hammer and sickle. And, if you're familiar with the history of the church, it had condemned communism for centuries. And now all of a sudden you had this Francis in the Vatican accepting this as a gift, which was extremely unusual. So we're seeing all kinds of things like this. I'll give you one more example. We could probably go on and on, but back earlier this year, there was the founder of La Repubblica, which is one of the largest daily newspapers in Italy. And that man is an atheist. And he apparently meets with Francis now and then. And they had a meeting earlier this year. And he came back from that meeting and he claimed that Francis told him he didn't believe in the existence of hell. For a pope to say that is if, and I'm saying if he said this, by the way, because we don't have the proof one way or another. Francis never denied it openly that he said that. But if he said it, we have a sitting pope that that appears to be claiming things that are contrary to the belief system of the Catholic faith. And, you know, that's exactly what the word apostasy means. It's exactly what Father Malachi Martin said that the third prophecy of Fatima was about the apostasy in the church. It's exactly what Cardinal Ciappi was warning about in 1995 when he said the great apostasy will begin at the top. So these statements we have from these Vatican insiders, they seem to be exactly in line now with what we're seeing and witnessing with our very own eyes today. So these are all very interesting things that are happening. And, you know, it's as you say, it's this particular pope that is very different from other popes.
Right, right. I used to love listening to Art Bell and Father Malachi. He was very interesting. He was involved in exorcisms and all kinds of things. A very interesting guy. He's passed away a number of years ago, but yeah, it was always great listening to him. And so also, while we're on this topic, I'm sure you probably heard that, I believe it was the Pope prior to this, the one that retired, which is actually rather unusual too, you know, for a Pope to retire. But I believe he said that it's extraterrestrials are most likely out there and we should baptize them or something like that. Did you ever hear any of that?
Yeah, you know, I have actually heard about that. And it was a bit of a departure from, like you say, what we're accustomed to hearing. I don't remember exactly the terms he used. It seemed as though I think he was basically saying that it's worth investigating, you know, whether there's other life out there. So he did seem to open the door on that.
Yeah, I think he said that we should count them as our brothers.
Yeah, it may be something like that. I don't remember the exact words. But,
thanks, Race. I think that was God, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, that too. But I do remember when that came out that that he said something about, you know, if they are a creation of life from God, that we should count them as our brothers and sisters.
Race, were you eavesdropping?
I was. And I also happen to be Catholic, so.
I see.
I kind of follow this stuff pretty tightly.
How about that? Well, join in anytime. You're welcome, Race. So.
Well, thank you, and I apologize for that interruption.
Oh, not at all, not at all. Another thing, also, I think it's fascinating that they have an incredible telescope in their own observatory. And, you know, that whole part is very fascinating to me, that they're actually interested in looking out there.
Yes, yeah, and they have been for quite a long time now. You know, a lot of people don't know, but from my understanding, and I haven't done a lot of research on this, but I have heard that they did used to look to the stars for messages from God, from like, you know, for insight or for understanding. And, you know, it would make sense if you think about it, because we always imagined and understood that God came from the heavens. That's the doctrine. So where do you look when you're looking to the heavens? You look up into the sky. And, you know, there has been a fascination with the stars and within the church for many years. And astrologers used to study the stars and look for insights that way. So, you know, it's not a new thing. Now, I think their understanding of what they can understand from the stars probably evolved over time. But that isn't anything new. And I'm sure that the interest is still there, obviously, from the comments from Benedict XVI.
I had tried to reach out to one of the astronomer priests at the observatory. I think it's in, do I want to say it's in the United States, right? Isn't they do have one in the United States somewhere? I believe. Maybe I got that wrong. But
I don't know. I couldn't confirm that.
Yeah, but they're supposed to have really amazing equipment, and of course, you know, as you know, the Vatican is extremely wealthy. I mean, there are people out there that said if they just sold their art alone, you know, they have Michelangelo, you name it. If they sold their art alone, they could feed the hungry and the entire world for, I forget how many years it is, but, you know, they're incredibly rich in real estate and art. It's amazing. And also historical documents.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Their museums are worth, I guess you could say, countless millions, if not billions. I know that they certainly have an enormous wealth. A lot of that wealth came from, they used to own a lot of land in Italy, the Vatican and the church. And what happened at one time when Italy was still forming, the Vatican gave up a lot of those lands in exchange for payment from the Italian government, from what I understand. And it was at that time that they ended up with where they are now, which is Vatican City. And so, you know, they used to have a wealth in terms of land. And when they gave up those lands, they converted it into a wealth in like a financial wealth. But they certainly do have an incredible wealth. There's no question.
I have a friend that was making a documentary, Roger Nygaard. He's actually been on the show. He's a skeptic quite a while ago. But he went to the Vatican and spoke to a bishop trying to get an interview with the Pope. And the bishop said to him, well, anybody can, you know, talk to the Pope. All you have to do is, you know, donate $20,000 for, say, 10 or 15 minutes.
Wow.
So he's basically asking for a donation of $20,000 just for a few minutes to speak with the Pope. So I guess that's a good fund drive.
Yeah, sure. I guess we see that in politics as well. A lot of people go to fundraisers to see Obama speak.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You know, so it seems like it's
in line.
Yeah. Now, I mean, he won't exclude people who, I mean, obviously, if you really need to speak with the Pope, it might be one way you could do it. But he certainly does speak to people without payment as well.
Oh, I'm sure. So I'm just letting you know, the lines are open if anyone wants to call in. That number's up on the screen on YouTube. If you're over at KGRA Radio and you want to call in, that phone number is 603-967-4030. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call. So I just want to skip back just one more time on Fatima. Do you think has anyone attempted to come up with a conclusion about what it really was? You know, I mean,
yes.
Do they just think it's completely like one of the miracles or whatever, and that's it?
By confusion, you mean an alternate explanation than...
It was such a weird thing that happened. We have a call coming in. Such a strange thing that happened. Why don't we hold that thought and get back to it?
Sure.
Okay. Caller, you're on the line. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Martin. This is Todd from Richmond, Virginia. How are you doing?
Hi there. What's the first name again? I couldn't quite hear it.
Todd.
Oh, hi, Todd.
D.
Yeah, hi. How are
you? How you doing?
Welcome to the show.
I'm doing all right. Thanks. It's a great show, long time listener. So I got a question for your guest. Have you ever heard of or ever read the book Exo Vaticana by Thomas Putnam and Chris Hoy?
Are you able to hear him clearly? It's a little bad connection there.
Yeah. No, I can hear.
Okay.
A book called Exo Vaticano he's talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Exo Vaticano. Yeah, it's by Chris Horn and Thomas Putnam.
Yeah, no, I can't say I've read that book.
Yeah, it's a really good, it's like an encyclopedia. They also wrote another book called Petro Romanos, supposedly about the last pope. But the Exo Vaticano deals with the UFO subjects and basically like what you're talking about. The Vatican has an observatory. I think it's I want to say it's in Arizona, where they have a telescope, and ironically, it's called Project Lucifer. Ah. That's the acronym for the telescope. And they presuppose that a lot of the sightings of UFOs, of course, were actually like demonic entities.
Hmm. Yeah, I've heard about that Project Lucifer, which. You know, is obviously a very sort of strange name for a project like that. It's almost seems to suggest that they're looking for Lucifer, which kind of goes against you know their value system. In the Catholic faith, they're looking for God. They're looking for God's Son, Jesus Christ. So it is an odd thing, and. It kind of gives you a sense, though, of where things have gone, and it should be a bit of a wake-up call for people, I think, to hear about these sort of things.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you feel like the sort of the Collins elite, Nick Redfern, he's wrote about it some, but they're also mentioned in that book. They were involved with it as well. I'm not sure what the Lucifer acronym actually stands for. It's interesting reading. It's a really long book. It's like an encyclopedia, but it's lots of footnotes and lots of they have web pages you can go to that has videos of purported aliens, which they say are demonic entities and stuff, versus the nuts and bolts. So
kind of interesting because it seems to have sort of a mix of science and spiritual. The whole idea of UFOs, I would say, is sort of more of a scientific quest, whereas when you talk about the demonic, you're referring more to something spiritual. So it seems like it's exploring both of these realms, if you want to call them that.
Right, yeah, exactly. I just found that interesting. I'm more of a nuts and bolts kind of a guy, but a friend of mine turned me on to it. It's a really, really good book if anybody wants to get a chance to read it. It's fascinating. It's a different take on it, you know? And like we all say, who knows?
Yeah, it's a part of, I guess, the writer's search for answers, investigating and trying to learn what he can.
Hey, thanks for the call, Todd.
All right, thanks, Martin. Great show.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah. Thanks a lot. So the line is open if anyone else wants to ring us and talk to our guests, ask a question. That number is up on the screen, 603-967-4030. Please keep in mind if you're watching the show and it's not live, that number is not working. It's only working during the show. I have heard also what he's talking about, the Lucifer and that whole thing. I believe it was probably on Coast to Coast or something. I'm not really sure where I heard that, but it's still interesting. And there's, just for the Catholic Church to admit that extraterrestrial life is possible, as that's a big change. And, you know, a lot of people have said in the UFO field that there could be collapses of religions and things like that, parts of society, if we actually find intelligent life is out there, and it's, actually, I'm not saying just UFO, but actually saw intelligent life, and there was proof of that everything would collapse. And I think it's almost like the Catholic Church is preparing for that. to happen, because we are certainly knocking on the door of the possibility of that happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing I think we have to admit is that there is a lot we don't know. And, you know, our knowledge of our world and our universe, it evolves over time. And, you know, I think that this is all part of our learning about our environment. And there's obvious, you know, it makes sense for us to have a curiosity about what's going on. I mean, the universe is just so vast. It's impossible for us to ever know about all of it. But it makes for a very interesting, you know, thing to explore and to try to understand. There's planets and universes that are beyond our imagination. And the only way that we can learn about them is, you know, to either use the equipment we have now, send the probes and satellites, or travel there ourselves.
Right.
So it's
right. We have another call. Caller, your first name, where are you calling from?
Hi, Martin. This is Andy from Stratford, Connecticut.
Oh, hi, Andy. How are you?
Good, and you?
Great. Great. Good. You have a question?
I do. I have to say, I missed the much of the first half of the show. I had another commitment, but I have to ask your guest, Paul, what his thoughts are on the idea that, you know, we're not alone, and that there certainly is other intelligent life out there. For myself, as a lifelong Catholic with a heavy Catholic education, and a father who was in the seminary, and a grandfather who nearly became a Jesuit, I know that it only adds to the richness of the universe and what God may is capable of. The thought that or the concept that we're not alone, and I think it's silly to think that anything is impossible. And I'll take your call off the air. I'll let you guys go.
All right, Andy. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Good show.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks, Andy. You know, I don't. This is a theological question, and I don't know that I could say I'm qualified to answer this.
Mm-hmm.
But I can certainly give you my own thoughts on it, and I would premise this by saying, you know, please don't take this as theological advice. You know, I've always felt that there can be life out there. And it's as Andy explained, you know, there is a richness to God's creation throughout the universe. Who are we? How can we say that we're the only ones necessarily? We may be, but it doesn't seem to be a stretch of the imagination to think that there may be other life out there. And if there is, it doesn't disqualify our understanding of the existence of God and God's laws. So I think that the two can coexist. But like I say, I'm not qualified from a theological standpoint. I do think that it always has been intriguing to me, this whole world of UFOs and UFO sightings. Something seems to be going on, and it seems as though there are things being concealed by us that have sort of leaked out that we're aware of now. And I do think that it's an interesting thing to explore, for sure.
Now, if you took basically what you just said there a minute ago and you took God out of the picture, just for you know, some of the people out there that are agnostic or atheist or whatever, some of the listeners, do you still think that intelligent life could be out there if it wasn't part of, say, a God creation?
Yeah, from a purely secular standpoint, you know, it's interesting, some of the stories that we've seen. You know, Area 54 is very interesting.
51?
51.
Yeah.
Area
close.
51.
Yeah.
Yeah, close. I knew it was in the 50s there somewhere. you know, the stories and testimonies we've heard from people, the farmer who, you know, found these strange pieces of a UFO crash sighting on his farmland, and the way it was dealt with. You know, there's a lot of things going on there that are difficult to explain. And, you know, I do think that they sort of open up the door to, you know, something worth looking into. Something's going on, and we have to ask ourselves, well, why is this being concealed from us, and what is being concealed? Certainly there's a truth in there somewhere, and I do think that, you know, like I was saying earlier, to this idea that extraterrestrial life exists out there in such a vast universe doesn't seem to be a stretch of the imagination.
Right. You know, going back, once again, going back to Fatima, and from what I understand, somehow, you know, 70,000 people showed up, and it was, do I have this right, that it was at the time a very remote and hard to get to place?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say hard to get to, but remote for sure. It was in the hills, in the pastures of Fatima, Portugal, and the children themselves lived in a very small. They don't even call it a village. It's like a little hamlet of a few, very few residents. And this field that they went to was even outside of that little hamlet. So it was a remote area, and it was in the hills of the Fatima region, for sure. Yeah, it's remote.
If you go back in time to 1917 and you think about what they had for media, basically newspaper, to me, I think it's fascinating that enough people, that many people from around the world, would do that, and traveling was not easy back in 1917, to think about all those people that showed up and showing up not knowing if they're going to have any food or anything, just plain showing up. And so I think that that part of the story is incredible, because obviously the word got out about these children. And how did it get out, and the way it did get out, if, you know, you said earlier when we were talking about that they weren't believed at first. So what made people take them serious enough to make that trip and travel?
Well, I would say a couple of things. Number one, there was a curiosity. You know, if you were told, just maybe 30 miles away from your home that these apparitions were taking place, you know, your curiosity would get the best of you, and you would feel that, you know, maybe I should check this out. I remember from reading, I've read a lot of material on this, and I remembered one of the first women who came out and was curious about what was going on. She spoke, I reading a text about her conversation with her husband, and her husband asked her, "Where are you going?" And she said, "Well, I'm going out to the field to see what's going on." And he actually laughed at her. He said, "You don't actually believe that the Blessed Virgin is appearing to these children, do you?" And her response was very interesting. She said, "Well," she said, "you know, I don't know if I believe it, but," she said, "if somebody told me that the king was coming, I would go out to see what was going on." So it's the same with this. I'm being told these apparitions are taking place. I'm going to go check it out and see what's going on. So I think it's that curiosity that sort of drove the country to want to come out and see this. The second thing I was going to mention is that with the media, the newspapers were reporting on this, and there were major daily newspapers that were also reporting on it. A couple of the publications were based out of Lisbon, which is the capital of Portugal. I believe it's the capital of Portugal. But it's a major city in Portugal. And so when you have major newspapers and small local papers all reporting about what's going on and everybody's talking about it, that would drive people as well to come out, especially when you have it reporting that a miracle is coming. There is going to be a miracle on a specific day at a specific time. How can you resist that? And I find it's very interesting. You're right when you're referring to, you know, we forget in today's terms, we forget how lucky we have things. You know, we forget that we have the luxury of being able to jump into a car or jump into a plane. You know, we can fly around the world inside of a day or two. And, you know, with technology, I can send a message to somebody on the other side of the world within seconds. So, you know, it's very interesting that you mentioned back then, those technologies didn't exist. And you're absolutely right. You know, for the most part, cars they existed, but not most people didn't have them.
Right.
Some people had to travel for 2 days to come out to see what was going to happen. And you hear about this in the testimonies, people traveling for 2 days by foot or by ox cart. And, you know, it goes to show you how strong that curiosity was or how strong people's faith was that they wanted to see what was going to happen. So, you know, the whole country, I think, at the time knew something was going to happen, and they were all very interested in seeing what.
So now you talked about this appearing on the 13th of the month, which is also another bizarre thing because, you know, I mean, just to be able to show up every month on the 13th. And did things continue after the October date? You know, like later on, did it skip a month or was it just plain gone and never came back, whatever it was?
Whatever it was, that was the end of it in that place with these apparitions. So it literally occurred from May 13 to October 13. Now, Lucia, who lived many years beyond that, she started speaking about other apparitions. She ended up becoming a nun, and she spoke about apparitions that she witnessed while she was in the convent. And so there was something that did continue with her, but these didn't occur in Fatima, per se.
Now, I know I have seen an image online. I think anybody could look it up. But where it does look like some type of object in the sky, you know, from 1917. Are you familiar with that image? It almost looks like a figure in the sky or something.
Oh, figure. I don't know if it's the same image I'm thinking of. I know there was something circulating about the miracle of the sun. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes, but it almost looks like there's some type of object in the sky. There's definitely something there.
Yeah, and there. See, if I'm remembering correctly, it looks like an old photo. I'm trying to think of how to describe it. I think I know what image you're referring to, and whoever's been circulating that image is claiming that this was an image of that was taken during the miracle of the sun. And I did some research on that image, and from what I've learned, it's not an authentic image. If I'm remembering correctly, it says on the bottom that it was released by the Vatican or something.
Okay, I just pulled that up on my own. On my own here on under Google Images, but I don't want to take you know showtime to. It doesn't really say. Oh yes, it says something about an observatory in Rome.
Oh, l'Osservatore Romano.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
that's the official publication of the Vatican. It's their official newspaper. So it's claimed that that image was published by l'Osservatore Romano. But from my research, I understand that that's not an authentic image. It's not a photo taken during this miracle.
Now, were there photos taken during that? It seems with 70,000 people, there'd be photographers there.
Yeah, and there were many photographers there, and we know that because if you do a search on this, you'll see the crowds that were in the field. Why there are no photos of the actual sun miracle? You know, I haven't been able to find an answer for that, but I have a couple of theories on that. Number one, it's quite possible that the photographers were so in awe when they were seeing this miracle, or maybe in fear, that it didn't occur to them to take a photo of that. You know, when you can imagine something that spectacular happening, you're kind of not focused on what you're doing or your function there, your job to take photos. You're maybe just staring in awe at something. So that's one theory. The other theory I have on it is that it's quite possible that there were photos taken of it. But if you can imagine, you know, I don't know if you've ever tried taking a photo of the sun, but you'd probably have a washed out image, especially back then with the cameras they had. They were very primitive cameras. They were like, it was the early ages of the age of photography.
Right.
The cameras that they had back then were not as sophisticated, obviously, as they are now. It's quite possible they took photos of the miracle and that none of these photos actually just developed properly, because I would imagine they might have been completely washed out. They would have been just big white images, you know, white frames. So that's my other theory on it. It does seem odd that there wouldn't be any photos of it, but I think those two theories are plausible explanations for why the actual miracle wasn't photographed. But certainly the crowds were photographed, and you can see that the photos, there's a number of photos of the crowds.
Do you happen to know if anyone looked at this situation in a science way, you know, scientifically?
Yes. Yeah, there are some scientific theories on it. One of them is that that this miracle was like a mass hallucination. So they like, if you think about it, the anticipation of the miracle, the fact that it was published in many newspapers, this idea that many people are coming out with the same expectation. The thought behind this all is that they all were anticipating something so much that they all had this mass hallucination together. So that's one theory that has come out. I think for me, one of the things that seems to debunk that is that there were reports from people who weren't there in the field, people in the nearby village where Lucia was from, who also claimed that they witnessed the same thing. Hmm. And so, you know, for them to have not been a part of this, and to still have witnessed it tells me that, you know, maybe it wasn't a mass hallucination. There were also reports that Pope Pius XII saw a very similar miracle when he was in the Vatican Gardens in the 1950s. He saw it, I think, on three different occasions within about an eight-day period. So the way he describes it, it apparently is very similar to the apparitions that were witnessed by these people. So again, it makes you wonder, you know, what's going on there. And there is a theological connection with all of that. So the idea of mass hallucination, for me anyway, it doesn't hold water.
Yeah, I've never really understood how a mass hallucination could actually work. I mean, I can understand anticipation for something to happen. And I have heard, you know, of situations where people are actually like sky watching for UFOs, and everyone's like, you know, whatever it is, they're so excited they're going to see something. And so maybe it's a satellite going over and or whatever it is, but they planned. I wouldn't exactly call that a mass hallucination, but I would say that because there are other people excited about seeing something, that they may, you know, get carried away. But they're not seeing like a whole object on its own. They're seeing things that look like they may be something. You know, that's where the difference is.
I've heard of those sort of experiments as well. You can ask 10 people to go out and look for UFOs, and, you know, the chances are, you know, three or four or half of them, I don't know, remember what the statistic is, but a number of them will come back and they'll claim that they saw something. And, you know, it might be something authentic, it might not be, but there is something to this idea that, you know, you're looking so hard for something that you can convince yourself you've seen something. And, you know, I don't want to discredit those who have seen things. I think that there's like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot we don't know about. You know, certainly there have been reports that were not authentic as well.
Right, right. I think we just had a caller join us. Caller, your first name, where are you calling from?
Yes, this is Sam from Chicago.
Oh, Sam, is it the Sam, the one and only Sam?
The Sam. You betcha.
All right, Sam Maranto. Sam Maranto's a friend of mine, and he's also a UFO researcher, and he actually, you did some work on Fatima, right, Sam?
Yes. Having been brought up in a environment of Catholicism and actually gone to a seminary and graduated from, you know, this is something was very much part of our family, you know, as far as the lore of different interesting things. And the movie, I remember the movie came out. My God, it was great.
Yeah.
But I'm really enjoying Paul's interview. The two of you are doing a great job. It was great to hear Race's voice jump in there. It was just took me by surprise. Yeah. I almost got down on my knees right then and there. I want you to know.
hey, just to let you, Sam, you're welcome to stay on the rest of the show. As far as I'm concerned,
okay. Okay.
Sam's a great guy, and I'm sure he's got a lot to talk about this. So we're going to close the lines for the rest of the show. They had plenty of time to call in, but anyway, Sam, you got something to add to what he's saying, or?
Yes, unfortunately, Paul, I came in a little bit late on listening to the show, and I you know, please accept my apology on that. The thing was with the area that Fatima is actually in, wasn't it referred to as being something in reference to a land of light, as far as the Roman name given to it?
I don't know about land of light, but as you may know, Portugal is referred to as the land of Holy Mary. In Portuguese, they call it La Terra de Santa Maria. So it's had a long history as being recognized as a land that has a rich history of devotion toward the Blessed Virgin.
Right. Oh, absolutely. But I think that very area has a reference to being to a land of light, in that very vicinity around the provincia or that area. It's an old Roman thing that I stumbled across years ago. But if I find it, I'll send it to you.
The other
thing was, it's interesting where you were talking about the observatory and something to the effect of the Luciferian or something about Lucifer, who is, of course, in Latin, that Lucifer means the bringer of light. That's very interesting to me, at least.
Wow.
So, yes, that's right.
No problem. The bringer of light. And here we are talking about a subject. And again, I was drawing in this scenario of this area of light and them seeing this illumination during a period of time when they had so much social strife. And I don't know if you had a chance to get into some of the labor issues going on at the time, communism, World War One, the wars they were having, trying to maintain their colonies in Africa. They had a lot of issues. So yep. When they had this going on, it was the perfect scenario, the perfect storm for them to make use of it and turn it in their political, both for the church, and the church was losing property at that time, as I recall, in Portugal. And the state was taking it back, and there were issues. They were having confrontations with the church. So Catholicism was on the line. The threat of socialism and communism was also something very threatening. And this was the perfect storm for them, was it not?
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. At the time, communism was spreading. Secularism was established. And I even remembered reading back in that time, Lisbon was considered one of the most secular cities in the world. And this threat was taking over all of Portugal. Religious freedom was being suppressed. They had what they called the law of separation, which meant that you know, religion had no no place in public, in especially in government, obviously, but also even in public. And they could get in a lot of trouble. They were, there was a point where they could get in trouble just for expressing their faith openly. And so there was a perfect storm at the time. It's very interesting that this all unfolded, the whole prophecy of Fatima, at that time. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the things we get into in the film, The Vatican Deception, is in the third secret of Fatima, there's we do have a line of text that was published by the Vatican that says, in Portugal, the dogma of the faith will always be preserved, etc. And it seems to be a reference to this preservation of Catholic dogma in Portugal. And, you know, in this time when you're speaking of, in 1917, where the Catholic faith was under under attack by these communist forces, it would have seemed like it would have been difficult for the Catholic faith to overcome this. And yet when Fatima came along, it really had a very powerful renewal of faith among the people. And it brought them back to their faith beyond what could have been expected or imagined. You know, like you say, it overturned all of that. That it's some people almost refer it to as a miracle for it to have overturned. There were some. There's the Freemasons as well. As you know, the mayor of they call him the magistrate or the tinsmith of Fatima. He was a known Freemason. He belonged to a local lodge there. And he was against the people coming out in the field and praying. He didn't want these people to come out, and he didn't want pilgrimages to this location where the children were saying that they saw the Blessed Virgin. And at one point, they built a small chapel there, and it was bombed. They blew the roof off of it. And there's pictures, if you look at it, for it on the internet, you'll find these photos of this chapel that had been bombed. And they say that it was the Masons that bombed it because they were trying to discourage people from coming out there. But their faith in what happened there was just so powerful. There was nothing they could do to stop it. It seemed like whatever they did, it would just bring more people out. And the numbers are just staggering. To this day, if you go out there in Fatima and you try to visit that place on any of the 13th from May to October, but especially May 13 and especially October 13, you'll see hundreds of thousands of people.
Oh, pilgrims, my goodness. Out there.
Yeah, it's...
Wow.
You know, so it's really turned this place into something that you could never have imagined 100 years ago.
Wow. Hey, we have 5 minutes left. Sam, I'd like to ask you,
Sure.
What your thoughts are on, you mentioned that you had like a Catholic background or whatever, but what's your thoughts on this incident or these incidents as far as the UFO side of it compared to the religious side of it?
I personally look at it, again, you know how it is. I don't believe, I'm an investigative researcher and that's it. As far as a dogma or whatever, it would have to fall in line. But, you know, the thing here is when we're doing investigative research, the evidence has to speak for itself. And what Paul has brought up, and other researchers too, this was a spectacle seen by 70,000 plus people, some say 30,000. Who cares? It was a volume of people, all of which had multiple agendas for coming out, some being skeptical, just coming out to thinking they're a bunch of idiots. Others, I think that the example, well, if the king, that was a very good example. If the king was coming to town, wouldn't you come out and look at that? Is very good. I think that's sound for the majority of the people. The other ones were, of course, devout religious people, and they're going out there thinking you're going to see the Blessed Virgin Mary. The other thing was there were some esoteric groups in the area who during that time ran some articles in the newspapers talking about some special event taking place on October 13th. Do you recall in your research reading about that, Paul?
You referring to it at the time in 1917?
Yes.
I do remember, there were certainly events related to the church calendar that they observed and celebrated, but that's not what you're referring to.
No. These are known esoteric groups that had a feeling that something was going to happen October 13th. They actually had articles in the newspapers talking about a big event, and it was to take place in Fatima in that area. But getting back to your original question, if you don't mind, the thing here is the religious aspect. The thing here is we don't have to even tear it apart. Something transpired, something absolutely genuine. And this is where we could take the skeptic to task and say, hey, the evidence is there. There's even physical trace evidence, is there not? The ground was dry. There were people experiencing similar phenomena, the buzzing of insects or bees. Do you recall that?
Yes. For example, I remembered, people were listening to see if they could hear what the Blessed Virgin was saying. And some people reported that they could hear almost like a tiny voice, as though somebody was speaking in a jar, or like very faintly, or like a bee buzzing in a jar, or something to that effect. So there were people,
and that was the more distinct was closer, and it all falls in line with sort a certain range of microwaves. The same thing with the people being dried, the ground being dried after they had rain for 2 days, or it was quite a bit of rain, and they were soaked, and here everything was dried. These are events. This is physical trace evidence. People being cured of certain ailments, which could fall in line with the effect of certain microwaves or certain energies affecting you. It could relieve some pain or distress, possibly even curing people. Who knows? The bottom line is there's enough physical trace evidence. There are enough witnesses there, some of which who didn't want to come there to accept anything as being plausible, and yet they experience it themselves. The bottom line is the event did take place. It is not a hallucination. Hallucinations don't give off physical trace evidence. I mean, really, and that's so absurd. But yet the skeptics will come out there, not even call them skeptics, just downright cynics. Something took place. Now, if you want to put it into the realm of something that has to do with religion, I have no clue. Maybe, maybe not. I'd say it's outside the scope of anything we could really put our finger on and say, oh, it's absolutely this. It doesn't sound like the conventional UFO case in its entirety, like you were talking about the religious aspects. The praying or the insistence of Lucia having to say the rosary. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's
right. The significance of that.
That's right. In the first apparition, actually, the only two. And see, this is why I don't think this is all a coincidence. I think these things happened so that we could look at it and we can dissect it and get an understanding from it. When the first apparition happened, the two girls were able to see the Blessed Virgin. But the cousin, the young boy, Francisco, he couldn't see it. And so he was asking, what are you looking at? What's going on? And so what happened was, Lucia was told by the Blessed Virgin that if Francisco starts to say the rosary, that he'll be able to see her also. And so that's what he did. He started praying the rosary, and the Blessed Virgin started to appear to him as well. So there's these religious aspects to it that you can't really ignore. You know, a UFO would not have asked for that sort of thing.
Right. I'm sorry, we are out of time here. So, hey, Sam.
Thank you so much for letting me be on.
Hey, Sam,
thank you,
always
Paul,
a pleasure.
Great job.
We'll be talking
thanks
soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. All right, Paul. Thanks so much, Paul. And so, thevaticanmovie.com, something like that, right? your website?
TheVaticanDeception.com.
Vatican Deception. That's it. Yes. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, and people can get in contact with you that way. I believe I did. All right. Take care.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. So thanks so much for listening, and we're going to be back next week with our guest, Scott Duchesne, and we'll be talking about living UFOs. It's a very sort of organic type UFOs. It's really quite a fascinating side of that story. So, all right. I want to thank the people that help out with the show, Race, for chiming in and helping out, and also Alejandro and our guest, of course. I want to thank them all, and thank you, the listener. We'll be back next week, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.